Hello, everybody, and welcome to Mom of the Hard Kid. Today, I'm going to be telling you a little bit about my observations versus some other observations regarding attachment. I was listening to a professor on a video talk about the different things that kids have in mental health, so abnormal child psychology, and she said this thing, it was so short, but it drove me absolutely crazy. As a mom of a child with reactive attachment disorder, I have not been able to let this go for days. And what she said was, kids sometimes have attachment issues, but many are going to grow out of it as they become adults. And then she starts to blame the fact that it's not a good connection. Sometimes there's just, you know, they've been in this relationship that wasn't a good match and it's not a good person, it's not a good environment, and then they grow out of it. And a lot of people have issue, but really it's mostly just going to be fine. And she kind of just went on to blame the adults. And I found this, as a parent of a child with reactive attachment disorder, very frustrating. Do I believe that some kids will grow out of it? Yes. Do I believe that some kids will not? Absolutely. Do I believe that people can be a bad match in adoption? Yes. And do I believe that that's the entirety of any attachment issue that you come across? No, absolutely not. So one of the problems I have with attachment theory is that most books lump it all together and they don't consider the broad range attachment issues have. Some might be as light as a child who doesn't like the family that they're with in their new home. They feel uncomfortable. They don't want to engage. They don't feel like they fit, and they have to work for several months to achieve that connection. And in some families, they never achieve that connection, right? It's probably more so what this professor was talking about how they don't like being there. It's super awkward. They never really understand. And then they grow up and find their own sense of community, people and family. And there it is. They found that they have healthy connections, but there are far more serious cases. And it is the more serious cases that I don't think the mental health field really understands. So when I say, for example, my daughter tells me how she wants to kill me and my children, I don't mean it like my son who pretends to shoot me or who talks about war and battle. He's innocent in the way that he does that. When he's like, hey, mom, and he like asks me questions about how people die and what that's like, it's not at all the same as when my adopted daughter tells me those kinds of things. Hers is not like that at all. There is a gigantic difference. Because when I go to sleep at night, even though my son loves talking about guns and he loves talking about things and war and killing and death and weird stuff, like even though he does that, I don't wonder if he's going to hurt me in my sleep. But I do wonder that with my daughter. There's a gigantic difference that comes in these circumstances. These are more serious cases. And if it were up to me, I would not lump this in to basic attachment issues. So I think when people go through school, they kind of learn the basic attachment issues. And then they're like, oh, okay. But I don't think they can wrap their head around it. I think there are more components at play. And to this professor, which to be fair, was only talking about attachment for like 45 seconds in a half hour video, she likely doesn't understand it like those of us who live with these children for 24 hours a day. So, but to this professor and to others like her, whether you're a mental health professional, and I've said this before, I will tell you what the fundamental component that I think is at the crux of attachment issues. And I think that it's trust. Now, before we jump too far into this topic, I want you to visualize what I mean. So we've all seen those videos of the person who finds the feral dog and it slowly gains its trust until it becomes the snuggliest dog in the entire world, right? We watch them slowly feed the cat or the dog and we watch them slowly move in little bit by little bit until the cat or the dog loves them so much that they can't go anywhere near their human without a smile, right? We love those videos. I love those videos. They're adorable. But please remember, they don't usually show the video of the cats or the dogs that never, ever put their guard down. Sure, you might get a, oh, this is my cat, Tom. I rescued him from the streets. Don't pet him. He'll bite you. And, you know, you think, oh, that's reasonable that the cat is vicious. He never learned to be sweet because he was just protecting himself on this from the streets. You know, but I have never seen a video where they're like, you know what? I found this dog. He was very aggressive. And he was so aggressive and he never stopped being aggressive and he kept attacking everybody. So we had to put him down. Or, oh, this cat Mitzi was constantly pooping all over our house and biting people's throats. You know, you never see the ones where it didn't work. Or Gus the cat that would viciously attack all the people in the house. So we threw him back in the forest where he could fend for himself because he was better there. Like, people don't tell those stories. But just like animals have a range of personalities, a range of trauma, and a range of resilience, so too do people. And it frustrates me beyond reason that people don't assume that both the parent and the child come into an adoptive relationship, or a non-adoptive relationship for that matter, with two totally different sets of experiences. Many severely traumatized children might turn out just like those fun videos of the violent dog that calms down completely. But folks, you are kidding yourselves if you don't think that children can be like the other kinds of animals. Now I know, because I used animal examples next to children examples, there might be a couple of people who are angry about that, and I just want to say, don't worry. It was just to give you a non-human visualization so you can take out the biases that you might have in regards to interaction between two humans and how there should be an ideal. And if there isn't an ideal, then it's somebody's fault. Well, sometimes it is a person's fault. And sometimes that person whose fault it is hasn't been a factor in the relationship for a long time. In my daughter's case, she is very tenacious. She will do and do and do something until she either figures it out or she freaks out and throws everything across the room. And if it's the second one happens, if she freaks out, she will still try again later when everything has calmed down. This is an enviable quality to possess. But it can also be problematic when the desire she has is mean and evil and dangerous. Different kids come with different personalities. They come with different resilience, and those resiliences are sometimes in different areas of development. Some are shy, some are aggressive, some are mean, and some are happy. And when you throw trauma into the mix, some grow instantly vindictive, and some grow weak and empty. So lumping all kids with attachment issues into the same box doesn't give credence to the individuality of human life. These kids experience trauma differently and they react to trauma differently. One study that I don't remember any part of, but I remember this one fact about, said that only 10% of kids that experience the same kind of trauma, I think in the book they were talking about orphanages in Eastern Europe, but I don't remember, but only 10% of those came out with attachment issues. Same situation, same environments, different kids. Each kid will approach their circumstances differently. And while there may be attachment issues, there might also be a plethora of other issues at hand. with basic trauma and attachment, you have to introduce the element of trust. And some kids, just like some pets, will never gain that ability to trust again. Or it will come very, very, very late in development. Whether it's because the trauma was too severe, whether the brain had permanent damage from that trauma, whether the brain development was stunted, so they're so far behind that they're not going to catch up with the people around them, or that they're just too determined never to trust because their feelings were hurt and because that's more of their personality. There are many, many issues at play, including that the person they were paired up with might not be a good fit. But if you, as a mental health professional, with mental health professionals, how about that, ignore the range of humanity, then you will limit your scope and you won't be able to help as many people. And I beg you, from someone who has been living in the extremes, please know that sometimes bad cases happen. And it isn't the fault of the parent or the child, just like it wouldn't be the fault of the dog or the caregiver. Sometimes the fault lies in the person who neglected, physically harmed, or created the original environment of fear and danger. And sometimes life just happens that way. Sometimes the baby going into the NICU can cause massive problems. Sometimes even just being born can cause a problem for that child. Foster parents sometimes have to drop out due to illness or something got overlooked. Sometimes it's a bad thing and sometimes it's not. And sometimes it's that current parent being a bad parent or a bad fit. Again, I am not saying that that means they're all good fits. I am saying that sometimes it really is that parts of the brain have broken. They don't function correctly anymore. And sometimes it really is that the neglect created fear that just doesn't seem to dispel. Sometimes the solution to attachment issues isn't just snuggles, hugs, and time together. Sometimes it's bigger. And sometimes the years of effort that you put in will move mere inches towards progress. There are many hard things in this world. And if you are a parent with someone with reactive attachment disorder, I know that you know that the dichotomy of love and hate are constant everyday problems. Don't let your mental health professionals or your medical health professionals gaslight you that the problem is you. Of course, it's good to have introspection and to check and see if there are areas in which it is your fault. But I do think one of the issues is they just blanket that over. Like somehow every situation should be similar to the one in the video where the dog calms down and is immensely happy. This is a huge issue, and it's deeper than the kid that you are constantly up against. Therapists, psychiatrists, or professors sometimes lack that understanding, but it doesn't make it not true. So to those of you who are getting up every day and who are constantly challenged by these kids who just go after you and after you, whether it be reactive attachment disorder, oppositional defiant disorder, ADHD, autism, whatever it is that you are up against, I hope you know that you are doing a brand of parenting that is very impressive. I was talking to my daughter who was crying to me the other day, my oldest daughter who's 14, and she was talking to me about how we don't get to have the kind of relationship that she thinks we should have because the younger daughter who has reactive attachment disorder constantly interrupts everything, constantly causes chaos. And because of all that, she gets all of the attention and my oldest daughter doesn't get the attention. She's a rock climber. And she was talking about how she's jealous of her friends because her friends will say, oh, I got in a fight with my sibling because, and then they'll say these really benign things and they never talk about how that sibling broke their things and they never talk about how that sibling tells them that they want to murder them at night and they never talk about those other things that she has to deal with every day. She says, I'm jealous. And I say, I know, I am too. I said, but you are on the mountain. You are going up the face of a cliff because the rock climbing. I said, you are doing all these things. It requires so much effort and so much muscle and so many things. And if you look down at the people on the ground and you say, I wish I was there, then you're not going to be able to put your focus into climbing up this cliff. And I said, the truth is, we're on the cliff. We are not in a position to not be on this cliff right now. So we're going to have to appreciate the fact that our muscles are flexing, that even though we're tired, that we're doing something difficult and we're there. We're going for it. We're diving in. We're focusing on it. And we're doing the best we can, which sometimes means falling apart. Sometimes it means you let go of the rope and you dangle there for a few minutes until you get yourself back together and climb back up. Because if you stare at the people on the ground and be jealous, you will spend the entirety of your life being jealous. But if you put the effort into your brain and say, you know what? I'm here. This is what I'm up against. I'm going to do the best I can. That's the only way you're going to get through it. Because you're not going to end up back on that ground again. You might as well do your best. I wish you all the best. Good luck with parenting. I know it's hard. And thanks for joining me.